we're on. We're off. So, thank you, everyone, for your attendance at this morning's audit committee. I do think it's slightly different than our last one. I don't think we're in fear of a few of us having to dash out because of school closures. However, some may wish to dash out for other reasons. But thank you all for coming. So, probably, as always, worth kicking off by reminding audit committee members of exactly why we are here. And they are on page 5 of your agenda under item 9. Do we have any apologies for absence, please?
Thank you, Chair. We don't have any apologies. All members of the committee are present.
Thank you very much indeed. Any declarations of interest? Gemma.
Yes, I have a contract with Grant Thornton. Sorry, Chair, can I just add that Sheila Collins sends her apologies.
Thank you very much. So, agenda item 3, the minutes from the previous meeting. Excuse me, I'm going to have to struggle to get through this today. The only thing I picked up was an awful lot of orsos, but that's just a personal pet hate. But was there anything else that members had which they wished to raise from the minutes? In that case, as I'm not seeing any nods or shakes, there we go. thank you very much. In terms of agenda item 3, then, the minutes of the previous meeting. Public question time. This is all going swimmingly because I don't believe that we have.
No, that's right, Chair. We've received no questions or statements from members of the public.
Thank you very much for confirming that. I'm going to move swiftly over the hurrah. Agenda item 5, the internal audit plan and charter. So for those of us frantically scrolling up and down various bits of tech, that's pages 17 to 34. Lisa, welcome and thank you very much. Let's hope yours works.
Thanks, Chair. So this is the paper for the internal audit plan for next year, as well as the audit charter. So starting with the audit plan, the approach and the format has changed a bit from last year, so I'll talk you through those changes. And this format, and basically this plan, went to the SLT in March, where it was discussed and reviewed. A couple of changes were made, and then it was approved. And so they have seen a report in this very same format. If you move to page 18, so starting off, it covers the aims of the plan. As always, the aim of the plan is to audit the key risk areas at Somerset County Council. So that's as always, as it very much has been. Two-thirds down the page in the highlighted text, you can see there that the committee is asked to consider whether the proposed plan is sufficient and appropriate in providing insurance against the key risks of the organisation. Moving on to the next page, page 19, we've got a graphic there which shows you the key sources that we've used to identify risk. So things like corporate plan, risk register, work we've done previously, national issues that we know about, issues that have come out across the partnership. So that's just a summary of those areas. Also, just to point out, at the bottom of that page, the point is made that this plan will be agreed and will be the starting point, but we very much want it to be flexible as we have in previous years, so where we do identify risks through the year that we can update the plan accordingly. Moving to page 20, we've got there a summary of the risk factors. So using all the information on the previous page, we produce a summary of the risk factors. So that's from like local up to national level. And an important part of the audit planning process is meeting with SLT members to discuss this risk assessment. And that's happened this year with individual SLT members in pulling together this plan. Page 21, that summarises the basis of the internal audit coverage that we'll go on to look at in a bit more detail. The operational audits that are in the plan this year, they all link to a corporate priority, so as you'll see that in a minute. And then the other audits in the plan relate to core areas of core assurance, and they're the healthy organisation theme areas. So we saw the healthy organisation report, I think it was our January meeting, so you should recognise those theme areas. And in doing that report this year, issues came out of that, areas of weakness that we are then focusing on in this year's internal audit plan. Then just moving through pages 22 and 23, that's more general information of who we are and the scope of our work. So then that leads us on to Appendix 1, where we've got the actual audits themselves. It is true that some audits could sit in more than one category, but I've just put them where I think they sit best. So it starts off with looking at those areas of corporate priority. So start with better infrastructure. I say that you can see that we've got good coverage there, but that's a really important area because it covers financial sustainability. So we've got the children's budget management audit sitting in there. It also looks at organisational capacity. We've got some interesting audits around succession planning, workforce planning in there. Digital capabilities are reflected in the FAB assessment audit. And in terms of sustainability, we'll be taking a look at community library partnerships later in the year. The next corporate priority is safer communities. An aim within this corporate priority is to increase the effectiveness of the voluntary sector. So we're going to look at the use of volunteers within the audit plan this year. There is also a Somerset Waste Partnership audit plan that goes to the Waste Partnership Board. So that picks up the areas of waste at Somerset County Council. Fairer opportunities. An important priority there is to reduce inequalities in educational outcomes and to ensure high quality education. So we've got a number of audits that focus on those areas. Then finally, in terms of corporate priority, we've got healthier lives, where we're focusing our audit work on public health and audit adult services. Then we've got the long list of the healthy organisation themes that you can work through the next couple of pages. So I say that those audits have directly come out of that healthy organisation report that we considered here at an earlier meeting. So those areas of weakness will be picked up in this year's plan. Then if you scroll down, you'll come to school themes. So part of our plan will be to go out to individual schools and do audit work there. So those areas are listed. In the section of other, I just wanted to bring your attention to organisational redesign. So we set aside some days there. In the early days, it might be general work, but what we hope is that as organisational redesign progresses, that we can do some focused pieces of work to support that. We've then got our follow-up programme, so all the partials from this year are listed there. And that's it. So I'll stop there and see if anyone's got any questions.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Lisa, for that comprehensive report. Morning, Simon. Questions from members. Graham, please.
Yeah, just a general question, really. There's an awful lot of things on this list of, that you're going to look at. Do you look at them in order, or is there a trigger? So does something trigger you go into a particular issue?
Do you mean in order, so in how they are scheduled?
Yeah.
Yeah, so each of those audits is allocated a quarter of the internal audit plan. And when we've had the planning meetings, we've discussed what would be the appropriate timing for each of those audits. So already that has been agreed. I just thought that was just additional detail that I haven't actually included here.
Would, if there was some particular issue that we were concerned about, that would trigger it?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. If there was a high priority, then we would make audit resource available to deal with that, yeah.
Thank you. Bob, please.
It was just following up on that question about resource. Obviously, there are a lot of things here. What sort of spare capacity is there in the system to deal with anything that crops up outside of this list? As you were saying, you'll need to deal with it. But how resource intense is this? How much of the resource have we taken up with just the list that we've got here?
Yeah, we've allocated all of the audit days in producing this plan. In terms of spare days, there's some around organisational redesign. We've got some general days, we said, for fraud and corruption, because during the year there's usually some investigation type work that we get involved in. But apart from that, pretty much all the days are allocated. So if something higher risk comes in, then what we will have to do is to work out what's lower risk and then push that back into the first quarter of 2020-21.
Thank you. Liz.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just interested in the terminology audit sponsor. Does that just mean the person who has responsibility from within the county team? So I've never seen that word used in that way before.
Yeah, it is the manager with overall responsibility for that area of the audit plan, and they would get invited to the initial meeting to be able to feed in, to help, you know, shape the scope of that work. They probably then wouldn't really be that much involved as the audit progresses, but then they would get involved at the reporting stage as well.
Thank you. Lisa, can you, just for me really, tell me a little bit and tell the committee a little bit about how you engaged with the officers to cover such a broad spectrum? And just really, I think for us, we've heard previously, it's not that officers are not willing or not wishing to do the work, but I'd just like to know sort of the process that had been or that you have engaged with to make sure we've got everything covered.
So the process in putting the plan together that's resulted in what we're presenting today. So it started back in January, and we organised planning meetings with pretty much all the SLT members. So that was a one-to-one meeting. Sometimes they would bring other people with them. For children's, it was the management team within children's. What we've got here, things like the risk register, national issues, corporate plan, we take all that information and we have an open discussion about what should go into the plan in the following year. We've done previous work, and so we already want to sort of do more work in that area. So we are also led by, you know, the audit work that has gone before, or we might need to do follow-up work, which we also sort of take audit days. But it's those meetings, really, that are really helpful, because there's so many things that we could audit, and so I guess so many sort of high-risk things as well, really. So, we do really value the intelligence we get from those meetings. But this year also then, so that a draft plan was produced that was then went to SLT in this very format. Before that, actually, the plan went to Patrick and I had a meeting with him and we talked about that. Then it went to SLT for another open debate and there was a lot of questions that came out of that. The plan was changed accordingly. And so then it got to the stage that we've got here to today.
Thank you, Lisa. So Do we have the ability, should we need to, if something were to arise, do we have the ability with the communication channels that we have to flex this if it was required?
Most definitely, and that's what we've done in recent years. And this year, that I will be attending SLT on a quarterly basis, so I think that gives another opportunity to take a look at the plans for the following quarter and decide whether we do need to change the order of things, put new audits in the plan, and then we can prove that with SLT. But things will arise through the year, and I very much want to make sure that we continue to focus on those high-risk areas.
Thank you. Liz?
Thank you, Chair. May I just follow up on that? Lisa, are you assured that if there is concern somewhere in the organisation below the SLT level of staffing, that there are appropriate routes through the organisation staffing for those concerns to reach you?
That's a great question, Liz. Oh. I was going to bring it up in a minute. On page 4 or 21, the insurance of the assurances and where you go with the assurances. But yes, please, Lisa.
Although we'll meet with SLT quarterly and had planning meetings with SLT members, a lot of our interaction is within the area below at strategic manager level, and a lot of the audit work does come through at that level. So we are getting a broad range across the organisation at strategic manager level.
Simon.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's a little bit of reassurance that might be helpful. I think it's probably fair to say that years ago, having an audit was seen as something you didn't really want in your area. I think attitudes have changed considerably, and I hope that the Leeson team will confirm that. To such an extent that in my own directorate meetings, we have a standing audit, which is where do we want audit to go and look, because we see that as being something that helps us through issues and challenges and also develops opportunities. So if it helps committee, I think there has been a sea change in an approach and attitude. And if we see areas where we think audit would help, we would call upon audit to come and help us out. And that, it's using those words as help. It's not get in the way. It's not be obstructive. It's not criticise. It's actually to help us get through things that we need to understand better. And we don't sometimes, especially as the authority has downsized over the years, we don't have the capacity and the ability to take several days away from your day job and do nothing but look at a particular issue in the detail that audit can. So if it does help, it's very much seen as a positive intervention, not a negative one.
Thank you for that, Simon. Yeah, I hope that goes right the way across and the sort of the tail end of the process, updates, etc., because I think the committee has heard previously that perhaps some of the things aren't seen right the way through, but yeah, it's really positive. Sorry. So thank you, Lisa, for that. I was really pleased to hear about the voluntary sector, third sector type work, because that's a huge growing everywhere I go. There's a new initiative out where we're using volunteers, and I think it's something to keep an eye on. And thank you for clarifying that there's capacity to deal really with the unexpected, I suppose. Yeah. Now with my screen's turned off, but never mind. So moving on to agenda item 6 then is the internal audit activity, pages 35, and it's again you, Lisa, please.
Thanks, Chair. So this is our usual plan progress update. This takes us up to the end of March. There are no high corporate risks that we're reporting this time. There are 2 partial assurance audits that have been included. The first relates to adult placements. We did an adult placements audit a couple of years ago. We focused on financial controls. That was a partial assurance. There's been a bit of a gap in following that up because of restructure within the team. One of the issues we found previously was a lack of consistency in approach, so the restructure has certainly helped with that. In doing this audit this time, we broadened the scope to look not just at financial placements, but the operational controls as well. It was the financial side of things that we've given partial assurance to. And the main reason for that is the lack of a validation process for home care residential care payments. The validation reports are available, but there isn't a systematic process of review or investigation that's in place. Another issue that we also found related to the financial agreements. The financial agreements need to go on to AIS so that the payment can happen. There were delays in getting financial agreements signed. They have to go to a number of places. It's all manual. We've recommended that an electronic solution is obtained to try and speed that up. Another area of concern was adjustments do need to be made, but at times there was a lack of audit trail and explanation of why those changes had been made on AIS, which would affect the subsequent payment. The other partial assurance related to health and safety and premises management. Again, we've done audit work in this area previously, and we followed up. And Somerset County Council put in place a number of improved controls centrally that premises had to follow. So this audit selected a number of premises, a range of different premises, to check compliance with these improved procedures. And it is true to say in some areas there were improvements. Identified that the use of systems to log and monitor maintenance and repair issues, that was much improved, and there was also much improved take-up of health and safety premises training. But an area of weakness that we did report was in relation to statutory inspections, where there was a lack of evidence that inspections had been completed, as no certificate was available on the premises. This was mostly in relation to fire extinguishers and alarm systems. One of the areas of improved control was an annual self-declaration that had been introduced. This would to prompt premises to identify areas of highest risk. Despite that, we still found that risk assessments aren't always being completed or aren't always up to date where that would be expected. A new system has been purchased, BSAFE system, to replace EEC, but this wasn't being used consistently at premises. I think the issue there is it's not mandatory, so then not all premises have to use it, but then that means that you can't do any overall monitoring or to identify, you know, if you have got issues with compliance. Finally, where SEC occupies a premises owned by a partner or a rented premises, we did find weaknesses with understanding who was responsible for health and safety in relation to premises management, and have made recommendations around that. What I would say is that the corporate landlord approach is being introduced at Somerset County Council, and that's going to centralise the management of premises. So that definitely provides an opportunity to strengthen the controls and address the weaknesses reported. So those were the two partials. Then moving through the report, and in terms of progress, see that progress has, we've caught up. There was a slow start, but we have now started to catch up. And in line, compared to other SWAP partners, we are actually ahead of the average. It's not to say there isn't still a lot of work to do, because we've got a big plan at Somerset County Council, and at the time of writing this, we were a third of the audits were still in progress. But I feel confident that by the time that come back in June with the annual opinion, that we would have finished the plan. I checked this morning, and since writing this plan, another 7 audits have been finalised, so we definitely are making good progress. Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Lisa, for that introduction and comprehensive. Go on then, Liz, please, thank you.
Yeah, just a few here, Chair, because some of this is the area of work that I used to do with the building management. So I was quite concerned to read some of this, particularly about fire alarms and fire extinguishers. So my question on that one is, that work presumably is completed by an outside contractor who goes round to the different buildings?
Yeah.
So do you look at that, in the scope of your work, do you look at that contract, and then do you, for instance, follow one building through the year to see how that contractor, be they Kuma or whoever, actually does it? Because this is something that the county used to do really well back in the day. The one thing you could rely on when you were a county council building was that all of your certificates were in order, and they were held both in the building by the overall management of that organisation and centrally at county. So whatever the failings of the county council, with everything being in triplicate and carbon copies as they were, this side of it was always excellent in my experience. So it's really disappointing to read that, because I know that those outside contractors are paid significant amounts of money to do those contracts. And I've seen, this time in English Heritage, I've seen some really poor practice lately, really poor. And so I've got real concerns about that. And then my second question was, who actually is responsible for the risk assessments at each building? Is it the local management, or does this organisation have somebody who oversees risk assessments for all of the buildings that the County Council runs?
Thank you, Liz, for those questions. If I may just jump in on the back of that as well. I've written exactly the same thing, because, in my small business, if I don't have my fire certificates, if I don't have my risk assessments, if I haven't done event management plans for outside catering, et cetera, I wouldn't get my licensing, or I wouldn't get these sorts of things. So I quite agree. I think we may have a couple of sort of lines of questioning there that, again, I'm going to bring up with scrutiny, because I think some of that process, but I'll let Lisa answer in a minute, may be more of a question that we, the audit committee collectively, needs to ask scrutiny to look into. But thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, thanks very much. Well, we looked at it from the point of the premises manager's responsibility. So when we did this piece of work, it was devolved responsibility. That's why the training had been so important, which is, since it's been mandatory since the first audit that we've done. But things are now changing. So, say, the corporate landlord approach will mean that there's just a corporate approach. The SEC will manage all the premises. So what you were saying about how central records, it's going to lend itself to that. So we are very much in a period of transition at the moment. But when we carried out this work earlier this year, it was the premises themselves that had these responsibilities, and that's how we approached the audit work.
And thank you, Lisa. And could we make a note of that we would like that looked at via scrutiny? Bob, please.
Well, a couple of things. One was just a comment on the progress. Which certainly, we were a long way behind, and to see that we've now caught up as well as we have, I think is a credit to the team and all those that you're working with. The other question, and it might be sort of skating onto audit, not from audit, but onto scrutiny, but it was really relating to the Be Safe system. And obviously you've raised the issue that because it's not mandatory, it's more difficult for us to deal with. Is there any reason why isn't mandatory? If we've replaced the old system with a new, better system, why are we not saying that's what people have got to use?
I think it stems back to the fact that the premises themselves had these responsibilities, so therefore they were responsible for maintaining adequate records, so they could use a system that they thought was best. So the SCC recommended the new system but didn't enforce its use. But I say again, now we're moving to corporate responsibility for premises, it's likely to all change.
Thank you very much for that question, Bob, and thank you for the answer, Lisa. And looking around the table, I don't think there's further questioning, but thank you for that. It's really positive to see, I quite liked on page 44, that if we are getting audits deferred, then replacements are very quickly agreed, and we're not sort of dithering, if you like, on that process. Just an air of caution, because undoubtedly we're doing great stuff, but we like to be ahead, for sure, but if we're ahead, there's always going to be somebody chasing up behind very quickly, trying to catch us up. So let's stay ahead of the game. So that's that. Moving on to agenda item 7, the external audit progress report, sector update, 55 to 76. Peter, you look, you know, rather lonesome sat there at that top end. I feel like I ought to come round and sit next to you, but please go for it.
Thank you, Chair. This is the progress report that we bring to every audit committee, setting out the position against the plans, plural, for 2018-19, both the county and the pension fund. Page 58 of your papers sets out in a bit more detail the current position. If I start with the opinion on both the county and the pension fund, clearly at the last audit committee we brought along the plan that set out in some detail our approach to discharging our responsibilities. We've now completed our interim work and made good progress as set out on page 58. The key findings of that interim work are set out on pages 60 and 61 of your papers. I won't go through those in any detail other than to say that there is nothing of any significance that we've identified during our interim visit that we need to bring to the attention of members of this committee. I just wanted to specifically reference the middle box on page 61 in relation to journal entry controls. So some of you that have been on this committee for a number of years will be familiar with this. Journals, it's a bit sad to say, I suppose, but journals is an area of particular interest for us as auditors because it's a very easy way of moving monies between cost centres, account codes, financial years, should anybody wish to do so. So we spend quite a bit of time understanding the controls, and as with previous years, we identify here that your journal policies does not require journals to be authorised by a second person. This is deemed to be a control weakness. I am acutely aware that in previous years you set out in quite a lot of detail why you believe that you have compensating controls. So we're just bringing that to your attention as we do every year. So as I said, we're where we want to be at this stage of the year in relation to the opinion, recognising that the most effective approach and efficient approach to discharging our opinion responsibilities is substantive testing, and the majority of that is done having received the draft accounts. So obviously I know your finance people will be working to the end of May deadline, and once we do get the draft accounts we will then embark on our detailed substantive testing. In terms of the other area of responsibility, the value for money conclusion, on page 59 we set out a bit more detail about where we are. We note in particular the current position in relation to the 18-19 budget, and are looking forward to seeing the final outturn position, recognising the positive direction of travel during the course of the year. Clearly, once we have that, we will be keen to understand the position and how it was arrived at in terms of outturn. Clearly, since drafting this report, full council at the end of last month approved the budget for 19-20 and the MTFP for the three-year period. We are currently working our way through that to understand some of the assumptions within that to inform the comments that we will be bringing back to this committee in July. And similarly, we continue to meet with your finance people on a regular basis, at least monthly, and spend quite a bit of time going through the seven recommendations that form the basis of the next item on your agenda. And in particular, our discussions more recently have focused on the way that you go about setting your budget for 1920, based on the fact that there were some recommendations in our previous year's report in relation to that, and also discussions with finance people about the close down and how some of the reserves in particular will be recorded in your balance sheet at the end of March. So I'll probably stop there, Chair, in relation to the progress. The rest of the report, in typical fashion, provides some details on think pieces, reports produced by us as Grant Thornton and other bodies that may be of interest to this committee, and for that matter to members generally. I will assume those as read, but I am happy to take any questions on the progress with the audit or any of those reports in the latter part of the agenda item.
Thank you very much, Peter, for that update for us and presenting the report. Gemma.
Thank you, Chair. Peter, thinking about your journal entry controls, and that you've historically said that Somerset do it in one particular way, you, as an organisation, audit other councils. Is this a problem you're seeing unique to Somerset, or is there a consistency across other councils with journal entries?
So I can't speak for my colleagues across all our audits, but I do three other counties. I do a number of other districts as well. And you are the only one of those councils that don't have any authorisation process in place for your journals. A number have arrangements that focus on the riskier, the inherently riskier journals. So there will be a sample check, and they may focus on the larger values or the unusual values. But I'm not aware of any others that don't have secondary authorisation for journals.
Yeah, please, Lizzie. I was just going to, because I'm kind of now going.
If you take a look at the responses that we've actually provided in the audit findings report over the last few years, you will see that actually we do have some controls in place, and there are mitigations to make sure that actually the risk is in actually reduced through our processes. So some of those items will be around having suitably qualified and trained staff who undertake these journals. As you will be aware, SCC has quite a lot of transactions over the period of a year. Some of those transactions do go into the wrong place, and yes, we do have to actually do quite a lot of journals. It isn't felt that actually the effort and work involved in providing additional assurance around authorisation of those journals is commensurate with actually the risk that we're exposed to. We have much more robust budget monitoring, and any material or kind of erroneous, unusual items would actually be seen in our budget monitoring reports. And knowing that actually we also do reconciliations, sorry, getting a bit technical now, in our balance sheet items as well, that would actually be very obvious to us that we would then not be able to match certain items. So we feel that our control environment and actions that we already have in place actually mitigate this risk significantly, and therefore for us, we don't feel that adding another authorisation step is commensurate with the underlying risk there for us.
Thank you, Lizzie, and I will come down on both sides of the argument here, because I totally get, and I'm hoping, Peter, you want to come back in a moment. Equally, I do know with some of the work I've done previously, looking at shopping cart entries, I did used to try and look really hard, and I did find the odd sort of anomaly, but every time I found something that perhaps didn't on the face of it look as if it added up, I got an answer straight away as to why. So I agree with you, Lizzie. There are all of those processes there, because there was always an answer. There was never not an answer for it. But Peter, please.
Yeah, Chair, just if I may, just to add to the conversation, I think it's fair to say that, interestingly, we do a lot of testing on journals, unsurprisingly, and to date, nothing has arisen that suggests that any of those journals have been deliberately incorrectly entered to achieve a desired outcome other than, as Lizzie set out, to correct maybe miscoding. So that you could say that provides you as members of this committee with some reassurance, and that's why we've worded it in the way we have within the progress report on page 61.
Lovely. Thank you both for that. I think it's something we should perhaps still consider all the time, because if it's something that is raised every time, why wouldn't we continue to look at it and monitor it? But, thank you. Mandy.
Just a point of feedback, really. There's quite a lot of information only and for interest sort of parts of this report that sort of adds value. I just wonder, though, whether it'd be useful making it clear within reports that is for extra information and extra reading, because not all of it, everybody might not want to read. And I think you keep reading through the report to find out if there's anything more on the reporting of this council in the report. It's not clear. And I would just make a request as to whether it could be sort of separated out so it was clear to see which bits were around the audit of this council and which bits were additional information that you think would be useful.
Okay, I'm conscious that obviously this is a style. So just to clarify, Mandy, if I may, is that in relation to some of the reports that begin on page 63 onwards? Because I suppose my take on this is that the first part of the report is an update on the council specifically, both the council and the pension fund. And the second part, which is entitled the sector update that starts on 63, is absolutely generic and non-client specific. So these are about reports, publications, think pieces that relate to the sector and the service lines that you're involved in as a council. So is that where you think there's scope for further clarity?
I think for me personally, this is just feedback for you really, under the sector update, I would really like to see the remainder of this report is not specific to this council, is generic information, so readers when they're reading are quite clear that there's a sort of differentiation in the report. And I think if you just headed up from there or highlighted that, I do think that would be useful and clear for councillors and readers of the report.
Absolutely happy to make that further disclosure going forward.
Liz, please.
Thank you. Peter, this is a specific question for you. Since last July, have you had all the access that you feel you needed to officers, to meetings, to reports, to documents, to everything you need to work towards what we will read this coming July? Are you absolutely satisfied you've had every piece of access you might need?
Absolutely. So on the back of the report that we issued last July, clearly there was a clear indication straight away from council of their commitment to addressing some of the concerns raised. And actually it was at the council's instigation and in particular finance officer's instigation that we met on a much more frequent basis with them for longer periods. So, you know, historically I would catch up with the Section 151 officer and the finance team on a quarterly basis. Since July we've been catching up monthly and spending a lot more time understanding where we are and where the council's going. And invariably that has involved finance officers in particular, but other parts of the council as well, providing supplementary information to support that direction of travel. And we have absolutely had everything we've asked for. Clearly, we will be asking for a lot more than we have to date in the next few months, because clearly we're getting to the business end of the financial year, and we will need a lot more information between now and the end of July to arrive at where we think we are in relation to our statutory responsibilities.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Chair. That's good to hear.
That answered my question as well about you're confident you're getting the right level of communication from the authority. And sorry, Liz, carry on.
I was just going to go on, Chair, to say, is this something that you will continue to do after this coming July, meet monthly, or is this something that's been a part of the particular situation and then you'd look to return to quarterly meetings?
So the move to the monthly meetings was, you know, requested, and it was something that we were absolutely happy to do because it makes our job easier in that we have that constant updating of the position. So, you know, I'm hoping that will bode well for the detail work, because actually it's very helpful to have those discussions early and ensure there's no surprises, because it does get very busy from here on in, and therefore I feel that we're in a good position, as I've set out in the progress report. As to how we continue to engage with officers and members, I think it will be partly dependent on what we say in July. It will be partly on what you want, because, you know, if you don't want to see us as often, we totally understand that, and we're not going to force ourselves on you. And it's just something that I think we need to decide once we're clearer on where we are for 18-19. But we would be absolutely receptive to carry on meeting more frequently than we have historically, if that is something that the council is keen to continue with.
So just leading on from that, is that something then that you'd recommend sector-wide, to have that more regular contact with officers and members?
So when you say sector-wide, if you mean by that other councils, I think it's something that needs to be decided between us as the auditor and the individual council, based on those unique circumstances about, you know, what we've found, where our concerns are, if there are inherent risks, so, you know, if there's change. You know, so I suppose when we undertake an audit, if we come across a council that has historically had a clean opinion, with no material errors identified, has never had any concerns around the value for money conclusion, there's no changes in personnel, there's no changes in systems, you know, there's no change in our team on our side, then arguably you could say that there is less need for more frequent engagement than there would be if you've got a new council with historic problems about closed down and inaccurate accounts and value for money conclusions being qualified, new personnel, new systems, new large and unusual transactions. Anything like that that makes it more complex, that's new, clearly we will want to be engaging with you at the earliest opportunity to discuss those, to make sure we understand accounting treatments, direction of travel, etc. So I think it really is down to a judgment between us as auditors and the individual council as to the level and the nature of engagement.
One more, Liz.
One more. So I went back to 2013, reading the value for money trackers, right back when things were really worrying last year. And I didn't see anything looking at the years before that would have started to ring the alarm bells until the alarm bell went off loud and clear. So that leads me to believe that something can turn quite quickly. And so I'm just looking at it from a slightly outsider view. It seems to me that the monthly meetings and the much closer monitoring of a council situation, not this council, a council situation, is something that the sector should be asking for. And if the sector doesn't ask for it, it'll see more problems, surely.
So the interesting thing about the alarm bells ringing is, you know, if we went back to, it would have been July 17 when we reported the 16-17 findings, our findings report there, the value for money conclusion was qualified, but it was only an except for, and it was qualified on the children's services rather than financial standing grounds. But there was a whole raft of narrative in our report about the direction of travel of reserves, etc. So, and I think that to a lesser extent in the previous year as well. So there was narrative in there, maybe not in as quite as strong of words as we used last year, that highlighted the direction of travel in terms of the strength of your balance sheet in particular, and the in-year use of reserves to balance the books. So there was some signposting, but I do accept that it was a lot stronger, and it had to be last year because of the outcome in terms of the overall VFM conclusion. In terms of your second question about the sector, there is lots of discussion going on about the role of the auditor. We discharge our responsibilities in accordance with the code, which is an opinion and a VFM conclusion. When I give a VFM conclusion, some people deem that to be all encapsulating. It's not. It is based on three very specific criteria set out by the National Audit Office: informed decision making, sustainable resource deployment, and working with partners. And the work that we do in that area is risk based. And if there is no obvious risk, we won't look at it. Now, if something then subsequently happens within a council, adverse publicity for whatever reason, maybe it's a service line, maybe the financial position, which is becoming more common, there is quite often the question, where were the auditors? And I suppose from an auditor perspective, we would absolutely welcome the opportunity to get more involved, but we have to work within the framework in which we operate. And the fees that we get paid reflect an estimation of the quantum of work we need to do to discharge that basic audit. And actually, interestingly, a lot of audits that are undertaken outside the public sector have no VFM elements to them. You know, if you went in and did a company's audit, it would be, are the finances correct? You know, does the position at the end of the year properly reflect the transactions in the year and the balance sheet at year end? There wouldn't be any VFM element to it at all. So you could argue that is an added element that exists within the public sector. There is a view that may be not detailed enough. And if we went back 10, 15 years, some of you may be aware that the Audit Commission did comprehensive reviews of a whole raft of areas. They came in and looked at the way the council operated. There is talk out there from a number of quarters about moving back to that. But at this stage, there is no immediate plans to do so.
Thank you very much. Bob, please.
Yeah, a couple of things. Again, one comment, which again, reading through the report, it feels like it's fairly positive in the sense that we're moving in the right directions, but we know that we've got the next instalment is the one that's going to give us the real detail and the information for us to get our teeth into on that site. One query about the reports at the end. On page 69, there's the item financial foresight. Am I right in thinking, is that a service that you make available to councils you audit, or is that in effect an advert for a product that you would like to sell to a council that you're auditing? So is it something that we can use built into what we already do, or is it something that would be extra costs for us to have access to the information that's provided through that? I just wasn't sure on what basis that was sort of put in there as information for us.
So it is an extra cost. So this is the next stage. This is the next stage in a series of platforms that the firm has been developing. So you may have heard of CFO Insights, which is its predecessor. This is something that's very new, and we have trialled it in a number of areas and are having some success in securing that work at a number of our clients and non-clients. Securing it at a client is, we have to be a bit more careful because of the ethical standards and independence, but it has been cleared in principle by public sector audit appointments. So any work that we do outside of the main code has to be approved by public sector audit appointments, and there are thresholds above which we're not allowed to exceed in terms of the cost of that work. And clearly, where we do it at the client, it is done by a separate team other than the audit team. But it's very new, and we are in a number of areas where councils are interested. We have been, the team that are responsible for it have gone along and introduced it.
Thank you. Graham.
Yeah, I'm chairman of the pension committee. I'm not sure whether I should have stated that as an interest, but and I'm very pleased that you're not showing any concerns as regard that, the pension's concern. However, it occurs to me, as you probably know, the investments are being moved to a non-for-profit company, and obviously that remains part of our remit to look at what they're doing. I just wondered how far your audit extends into this new investment company. Where does your responsibility stop?
So interestingly, we are, and we declared in the plan for the pension fund that we are also the auditors of Brudel Pension Fund. So, but in terms of, not me personally, but in terms of my role as the appointed auditor of Somerset Pension Funds, we are aware that for this year you have some level of investments that have been moved across into Brunel, we are currently considering how best to get assurance on the carrying value of those investments at year end. Clearly, your custodian has a role to play in bringing together, because arguably you could argue that your money that's over with Brunel is just like another fund that it's in. So we will be understanding how your custodian as it does with all your other funds, brings all that together to and aggregates them to get assurance over the carrying value. But we are also, and we're still to finalise this view, of the view that we will be writing to Brunel to understand their arrangements and how they get assurances over them, the accuracy, prior to passing that information back to you for consolidation into your pension fund.
I presume then that Brunel will be appointing their own auditors, and you'll work closely with them.
So Grant Thornton are the appointed auditors at Brunel. Yeah, we are. So that makes the recognising that the Chinese walls that exist, we will be writing that to them to get assurances over some of the controls that operate within Brunel.
Liz, please.
Sorry, at the risk of people thinking that I'm spending too much time on this, I completely agree with you, Chair. I would like to make a proposal from this audit committee that we ask the leadership of this council to acknowledge and appreciate the good work of internal, I've written it down, don't worry, internal and external auditors in the recovery of the financial position of Somerset County Council, and that we ask the Cabinet and SLT to ensure that the robust work of auditors continues at an appropriate level.
Lovely, thank you, Liz. Can I leave that minute to perhaps reword, or if you're happy to pass me that, I think it's a very valid point, and I'm sure the committee would be happy to get behind something similar to pass on to SLT and Cabinet. I just want to doubly sure I was getting the correct wording for that. But Mandy, did you have a question for Peter?
Yeah, just a couple of things, and I was just trying to absorb that as you passed on to me there, and I think it's absolutely key that all councils work with their auditors. And I suppose my question moving forward is that audits right across the country for councils need to be effective and appropriate, and I just wonder whether in these sort of stressed financial times, whether what the auditors do and their involvement over the next few years will change a little, really in line with what you've said. And I think for me the key issue here is if there are councils where problems are being identified, and you said yourself for several years there were comments within the end of year reports, I suppose my question is, where does audit have involvement beyond that comment, i.e. once an issue's been raised and you're flagging it, should something then be done to stop it escalating over the sort of coming years? And I just wonder whether audit has a part to play in that for all councils moving forward, to give, I don't know, tips, advice, help and support.
So having made a recommendation for improvement, whether that be in relation to the accounts, whether that be in relation to your financial position, whether informed decision making, partnership working, clearly we would expect a response to that. You may recall that in the July report last year, I referenced the possibility, if things don't improve, of statutory recommendation. You may have noted by its absence any reference to that in recent meetings, because clearly I have absolutely, as I've referred to in my previous progress reports, seen good momentum and direction of travel. So that I won't say it's a threat, because that's been a motive, but the reference to the statutory rec that was made, you know, if things didn't improve at Somerset, was made. And that is one of the powers that exists for auditors. Clearly, if a council has been criticised in whatever area by their auditor and things don't improve and we see no real response to it, then in exceptional circumstances, there will be an opportunity for an auditor to issue a public interest report, and that's been done in a number of areas where a council has clearly failed and has not, in the eyes of the auditor, been seen to do anything about it or not at the right speed. In relation to the question about the role of the auditor going forward, you may be aware of some of the wider politics around the Financial Reporting Council and its abolition, and you know some of the big corporate failures, whether it be Carillion or whoever, and you know a question about where were the auditors, what was the robustness of the approach, you know, and whether FRC had enough teeth to ensure effective audit. And I think the jury's out, but there clearly is a view that some changes need to take place in terms of the audit profession as a whole. Clearly, the audit approach within public sector is governed by the NAO code, and I would be surprised if they weren't having regard to that. And interestingly, PSAA, who appoint us as auditors, so if there was a view, for example, that, you know, perhaps every council in the country needs somebody to come in and independently look at their financial arrangements, you know, in more detail than has been done by the auditor, because lots of councils will have not had their financial arrangements crawled all over like you have, because, you know, they may have delivered against their budget and they might have a strong balance sheet. And that might be more due to the fact that, so if you, we digress here slightly, but, you know, if you take some of the smaller councils on the south coast, particularly districts that had large-scale voluntary transfer with their housing stock, they're sitting on huge balances, you know, multiple times of their annual spend. They could be particularly badly run, but they're never going to run out of money. So, you know, the need, arguably, for somebody to come in and do that work at every council could not be procured by PSAA. That would need to be a National Audit Office decision. And whether they are considering that, I don't know, but clearly there are more and more voices out there saying now that arguably the Audit Commission may have done too much, but now it may have gone too far the other way, and with the fees coming down and the restricted remit of the auditor at the moment, maybe it doesn't cover enough of the areas that it should do. Sorry, that's a very long answer.
Just to respond to that, I think you're right. I think things will change slightly, and I think it's right that they do to actually fit the times that we are all in, and I welcome that.
Thank you very much. Lizzie, did you want to add a further point?
I do just want to make one comment, and it's probably then going to take some of the kind of thunder from my next item anyway, is that we do have, as Peter's alluded to, very regular meetings with our auditors. Our conversations are quite frank and honest in those meetings. We don't hide anything from them, because actually for us, we are very much engaged in needing to turn the organisation around. And there has been such significant change over this past year associated with that actually need for us to really get hold of this, grasp it, and actually really tackle some of those underlying issues. So you will have all been kind of really aware of budget monitoring and improvements in budget monitoring, the improvements with the budget setting process, more visibility, much more information available to everybody to ensure that we actually continue that journey of improvement and progress. We sat there, we listened to the value for money assessment of our auditor, and we were not willing to just sit there and let things continue. So we're very engaged with that process. The organisation is, and I know members are across the board as well. So I see this actually as a really, and it sounds strange, but actually a really positive step for us, this journey that we've had over these last kind of 8 months, a year or so, to make sure then that we actually continue to learn. Peter will probably, you know, actually verify that we do have honest, frank conversations. We push back where we feel some of the information or some of the recommendations aren't necessarily where we think they are, to make sure then that the auditor does fully understand our position. So I just wanted to say that, actually, very much open and honest.
Lovely, thank you. Well, I think I can feel within the room here already that there's a consensus. I think I'll work with you, Liz, absolutely. But from my point of view, I'm sure the committee recognises the work of the internal, external auditor and us as an organisation. And I'm hearing clearly, you know, there's no room for complacency anywhere within this. Neil, if that's all right, sort of after, in terms of the minutes, I'll work with Liz, and we'll, if the committee is happy with that, then we'll take forward from the audit committee to make sure that Cabinet and SLT recognise that, as we have. And yeah, great. I mean, I was pleased that you detailed it on page 4 of the work that you did have with that communication and handover from our 151 officer to the new 151 officer, and how that's articulated out and through. So much as Mike won't like me saying it, it is all positive, Mike. There you go. So thank you very much indeed. Thank you for your time, Peter, in the hot seat that you seem to have engaged in there. And you are free to leave, as they say. Thank you very much indeed. That's very kind. So moving on to agenda item 8, the value for money trackers pages 77 onwards. Lizzie, thank you.
So seamlessly into almost the same subject for the committee, which is a bit strange. So you'd be very familiar with the tracker over these past 6 months or so. This paper is just the latest update of the actions, and the detail can be found in the appendix. I just wanted to point out a few things pertinent in this paper. So a couple items. Month 10 budget monitoring went to Cabinet only a matter of weeks ago. In that meeting, the risk associated with Org 43, the financial position of the authority, the resilience, was actually downrated from 25 to 16 due to the significant improvement we've seen through this journey. I just wanted to kind of just make the committee aware of that if you weren't. Details of the updates can be seen summarised in section 3.6. You'll be aware of the continued progress that we've made. As you've heard, dialogue continues with our auditors with regular progress meetings and updates associated with that, and they've recognised the difference and the progress that's been made against our plan. Obviously, we are very keen to do another update, so we will do another review of all of the tracker and all of the actions before we get the final assessment from our auditors in the July committee as part of that value for money assessment that sits alongside our statement of accounts work. And there are a few things looking forwards that the committee just need to be aware of. So in the new year, we will be continuing to report on a monthly basis on budget monitoring position through Cabinet and through scrutiny. Both of those committees obviously have a very active role to play in ensuring that we continue to improve the visibility and understanding and set things out in a really appropriate way to actually get the understanding of our position. So we are going to continue to do that progress and make sure that the focus is still there, that we don't take our foot off of this, because actually, as the chair actually said earlier, that we can't be complacent. We aren't out of the woods yet. The underlying position is still one that isn't as secure as we would like it to be. So the focus for the organisation is still very much on finances on a regular basis. Apart from that, I think that's probably it for the report, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you, Lizzie. So just for me, really, on the MTFP, was the process different this time from previous years? Just if you'd like to articulate that to me in layman's terms, that would be great.
Yes, absolutely. So this particular MTFP budget setting process, as part of ensuring that our budget was much more robust, we went through all of our previously identified savings and non-delivery and recognised where they weren't deliverable, that actually they just needed to be recognised that they weren't deliverable. So they got added back in as pressures. This year we've also added in some additional pressures such as inflation and pay increases and increments that haven't been recognised in the past in service budgets. So they were almost hidden savings for services because they weren't having those additional pressures added in. Mm-hmm. All of that very transparent in the budget papers. And the budget papers as well included all of the proposals for change, identifying all the individual savings to ensure that there was that visibility of the areas where we were going to be making savings and cuts, or we were proposing those to Cabinet and then on to Council. So absolutely more robust than it has been. Part and parcel of the financial resilience for the authority has also been the level of reserves. So we've also recognised that actually reserves could not continue to be depleted, and we have recognised the additions into the reserves that are required, including the payback of those negative reserves that cause additional concerns for us as officers and, you know, members and our auditors. So from my perspective, absolutely much more robust and much more visible for people.
Thank you, Lizzie. Mike.
Sorry. Thank you, Chair. You mentioned that the process now is much more robust. Clearly, it didn't work last year. In a nutshell, I know you could probably talk for hours about it. what went wrong last year? You know, what didn't we do last year that we are doing this year to ensure that we don't end up with that 25 score and the risk for sustainable budget?
Finance has been taken seriously by the organisation. So the auditor's value for money assessment last year was actually quite a wake-up call for everybody. There have been indications in budget monitoring reports and in the outturn positions. However, it was probably not as visible as it needed to be. So we are learning with our auditor and ensuring that we continue with that visibility. Monthly monitoring and ensuring that we are really clear with that focus on a monthly basis has been actually really critical in this. And SLT have been meeting on a weekly basis and focusing on finance to turn the authority around. Those are the actions, really, to make us focus on the seriousness of our position.
OK, I guess that's...
Thank you, Mike. I think Mandy is going to respond as Cabinet Member. But Mandy, if I may, I think later, offline, if you want to go backwards and find out these things, then I think that's, you know, fine. But we want to learn from those mistakes, but we're definitely, in my opinion, I want to concentrate on the travel forwards. But Mandy.
I think one of the key differences and something the audit picked up last year is how you actually deliver the savings. And you will see from the audit reports previously, we did not deliver the savings that have been laid out. There's been a very, very different approach to that this year. Any savings that were put forward, if you remember, had that the percentage of delivery against them. And I think that's made a huge difference. I think the second part to add to that is with the monitoring within SLT, any savings, everyone's mapped, and if there is a problem with one of them, they don't think it's going to be delivered, they will go back and say, well, we need something else then, and it's not just left. And I think that persistence with the saving, monitoring it, mapping it, and adding that assurance as to whether they think it will be delivered or not, I think has given a whole different approach. And those savings have been the key. If you don't achieve your savings, you will not be able to balance your budget. So I think that's probably the main difference for me, looking at last year and this year. It's monitoring it, watching it, understanding if it's not achievable, and what do you do then to pick up that gap. And I think for me that's been a key difference. And everybody watches them, as Lizzie will know, very closely. Everybody's very honest and very frank in their discussions, and I think that honesty and also helped achieve the savings that we have. So if we look at where we are with our savings this year, it's a very different picture as to what we've achieved this year when you compare to what we achieved last year. And I think for me that's a big difference.
Thank you, Chair. That's really useful. Good to hear. I think just to be clear, my motivation in asking the questions is not to rake over last year's uncomfortable situation for the sake of it. It's being sure that as a member of the Audit Committee that we aren't going to get 3 or 4 months into this year and start scratching our heads again because something similar has happened. It's making sure that that forward travel that you talk of is more secure than it otherwise would be if we weren't talking about these sorts of things. Thank you.
Absolutely, which is why it's incumbent on us as an Audit Committee to deliver home in the strongest possible ways the recommendations of our auditors. And I think, yeah, make it difficult, if I may. Sorry, Lizzie. You know, make it difficult for those questions not to actually be answered. And I think, yeah, that's certainly the way I intend for it to continue. Any further questions? Lisa.
I was just going to say that we looked at the way the savings worked through last year and brought that to Audit Committee, and that was a partial assurance, was a completely different way of doing it this year, and that piece of work is ongoing. So at the June meeting, I'll be reporting back on the findings from that.
Lovely. Thank you. Just a couple of little things that I was really pleased to see. I hope Liz will agree with me. I was really pleased to see the training in there for members, as always. So can't get enough of it, quite frankly. Pam, sorry to put you on a spot, but could I please ask a question as well? And I'd like an honest answer. We are repeating ourselves, but I'm keen to stay on it. In your opinion, is the JCAD being updated as you would wish?
It's right to say there has been some improvement in the update of JCAD, partially because I've managed to work further with ECI, particularly around economic development, with the suite of risks that they had stalled. We've managed to rationalise some of those, and that took care of quite a few that were out of date. So as of about 10 minutes ago, we're about 11% of the risks in JCAD have not had a review by the senior responsible person. That is a considerable drop. We usually run around the 25-28% mark, so that is good. And on the action side, so that's the things that members and officers have identified as the pieces of work that need to do to mitigate the risk, we're running about 12%. That too is a drop.
Thank you. So improvement, but with the committees, if they will permit me to suggest that, could we please note it in our minutes again, that we would like this articulated via SLT and via our PAT and the Cabinet to ensure that this really is taken as seriously as it should be and continued on. And, of course, I will speak with the Cabinet member responsible for that. Mandy.
Just to say, I have raised this with Cabinet SLT, and I'm working with Pam to have an improving position. I think we've seen some improvement, and I think we will see it improve again by next committee.
Thank you. I think it's the articulation out a little bit past Cabinet and CLT, SLT, which would help, I think, as well, wouldn't it? Thank you. Mike.
Thank you, Chair. Well, we've got Pam talking about risk and things. I just wondered, can I... is it? Okay, shall I wait then? Is that so...
I'll wait.
Okay, that's a very good point.
Okay, so I think we've concluded that particular item then. So just while it's still fresh for Mike... Moving on to agenda item 9, risk management, partial audit, pages 91 onwards. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Chair. So, the report in front of you highlights in Appendix A the position on the 20th of March when the report was published for the requirements of updating those risks on the strategic risk register. So just to remind you that anything on the register that has a red date is overdue a review. So they're the things that when you scan through the list, if it's all black, it's fine. If you pick up a red date, it's because somebody's missed their review point. So that highlights those. If I was to look at that report this morning, there are one or two variations, so a couple of things have been updated since the report. The report was produced at the very latest hour to make sure it could be included with papers to make sure that the position that you saw was the most up-to-date possible. JCAD is a live 24 system. It is available 24 hours a day if somebody wanted to do it. So it is also a real-time system. So if anybody goes in and does an update, it's immediately available to be seen. So a 20th of March, in my terms, is still quite a late, out-of-date type report. As Lizzie said, ORG 43, the strategic risk about maintaining a sustainable budget, has had a decrease in its overall rating. It went from being 25, which was critical and very likely. It's been reduced down to A16, so it is still very likely, but it's now the impact of it would be major and not critical. Obviously, this is one of the strategic risks that will probably slide up and down the scale in the future. It's not a static thing. None of them should be static. Can I just apologise for the table in 3.1? The split is due to a formatting process when you swap something from a Word document into the document that ModGov needs into the format. So unfortunately the table is slightly split. So my little black arrow that's flying in the wind actually relates to 43. So it would highlight on the heat map that 43 had moved from 25 to 16. It should sit there. And the rest of the risks haven't moved at all. Now, with the new business planning and service planning, there is still a workshop that needs to take place with SLT to consider the strategic risks that we have and to identify any new ones in the future. Unfortunately, the date for that has been postponed again, but I'm hoping it will get sorted throughout the summer. So I'm talking before the kids break up for school, as my summer. There is an explanation about 43, which takes you down as far as point 3.8. Point 4, swap internal audit recommendations. The table in 4.3 highlights from July 2018 to the January meeting of this year those swap audits that were presented to the committee as a verbal update. So there are 9 of those reports in the last 12 months that have physically come and given you a verbal update. Swap reports are recorded in JCAD, and JCAD works in exactly the same way for a swap audit as it does for a risk audit, that an email is sent to the responsible owner, the sponsor of the audit, and the person who has been identified in the audit report as being in charge of the recommendation, telling them that the reviews are due. So table 4.5, also produced on the 20th of March, shows that 6 swap audits were past their review last week. For the eagle-eyed amongst you, you will see that one of those audits, 22, concessionary fares, was verbally presented to you in November 2018, but is still showing in JCAD as being past its review date. I know it's a process, and I know people think it's a bureaucratic process, but we need to have JCAD up to date with the right information, because if we were asked to produce a report for somebody, I wouldn't be able to give the most up-to-date information because it doesn't match what came to audit last November. So more work on the audit front for swap, but I will work with Lisa and we might have to come up with a better way of sorting it. So the conclusion is there is a bit of an improved picture, certainly around reviews and actions. I hope that continues and it's not just because once again SLT have been reminded of the responsibilities required. It's only a future report will tell. Could I ask, would you like to still see Org 43, the sustainable budget, every meeting as an independent little line in the thing? You would. Lovely. Thank you very much. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you very much for that report, Pam. And that does, and Mike's ready for his question still, and that does show us, as I think we already know, the importance. And I agree with what you're saying. We can all appreciate and understand how JCAD is a forever moving, living thing. So at times, although they might be articulated in one way, it may not necessarily show in the other. But working within that parameter, I can see the difficulties there, but we need to make sure that's clear. Mike.
Thank you, Chair. Having heard what the answers to my earlier questions about the Council's sustainable budget, I'm a little concerned to see that it's still regarded as likely that we don't have a sustainable budget despite all of those things. So I wonder if Pam or someone else wants to just come back on that and explain why, having done all of these amazing things to try and prevent the sort of situation we had last year, that we're still in a situation where it is likely. And secondly, on the same topic, I just wondered if someone could explain to me why the risk, or sorry, why the impact of having an unsustainable budget is less this year than it was last year. I know about the risk. I can accept the risk moving from 5 to 4. I get that. I understand why that might have happened. I'm less clear as to why us having an unsustainable budget would have less of an impact this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. I think there's a couple of sort of points to that. One might be Pam a bit later, but Lizzie, would you like to?
I'll try and tackle both elements of that question, and please forgive me if I kind of miss one of them. So the first one was about the likelihood and the fact that we still are having it shown as likely rather than not as likely or reduced to 3 or 2. So we are very early in the process of this turnaround. So what we don't want to do is take any of that focus off of that. We want to be able to see the savings that were put forward as part of the budget in February actually progress and track through to ensure that they are being delivered. So until we see some of that progress in the budget monitoring reports that will come forward as part of 2019-20, we are very reluctant to remove or reduce that likelihood rating. It could be that actually within the first few budget monitoring reports, we actually recognise that all of the actions are in place and all of, you know, a good majority of those savings have already been delivered. We may then reassess, but until that point, we don't want to take that assessment lower. Your second point was about the impact. Yeah. So we are, in the latest budget monitoring report, you will have seen the underspend and the trajectory of the underspend. That will automatically have an impact on our reserves. But part and parcel of some of the additional management action that's taken place since September's cabinet meeting has also addressed some of the negative reserves. So the paying off of the LD negative reserve is a significant thing for us, because that then allows, in reality, £5 million more in our reserves that we then don't have to be so considered about. So the impact on all of that and the repaying of some of the other negative reserves and bolstering our general reserve in 1920 as part of that budget means that actually the impact will not be so significant, because we have more in our reserves to be able to cope with some of the ups and downs and the unknowns in the year.
Just come back on that very briefly, thank you. So thanks, that's really good to hear that the reserves are healthier. Can you just tell me what the current reserves are, what we've got in?
Off the top of my head, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Okay.
They would also be estimates at this stage until we do our final closing. So very close to the 31st of March, we are only a couple of weeks away from those final transactions. The outturn position will be coming through quite quickly through June, and then you'll see the final position in July in the Statement of Accounts. But June's Cabinet will have that outturn report going to them. It will be there that we will clearly set out the impact of all of that activity during the year and what that's done for our reserves, and then the forecast into 1920 and onwards.
Okay, and then the second part of that was, how was the negative earmarked reserve for LD repaid? Where did that £5 million come from?
The detail of that is in the budget monitoring report, so that's all in the adult services area. The report will go into the detail about the underspend, what actions taken place to ensure that underspend was at the level that it is, to ensure then that those monies are ring-fenced within the adult service to repay that negative reserve. So you will see that in the budget monitoring report.
And just finally, promise, just to be clear on that last point, the money has come from the adults' services budget through underspend rather than savings delivered by the LDPS. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct, yes.
Mandy, did you want to add?
I was just going to pick up on the reserves position. Obviously, right throughout the year, we've got a contingency part of the budget as well that really stays right to the very end of the year in case we have unexpected situations arise. So obviously, that the potential to also put that contingency money into reserves can come, but really not until right at the end of the year. So we would expect, hopefully, that amount to be going into reserves to be a little bit higher than was last reported.
Thank you. You both went up at the same time. Ladies first. Liz.
Well, I think on turn and turn about, you should go first, really.
Chair, it's quite a saucy one, really. It's about outstanding debts at the end of the year. If you know that they are outstanding debts and they will never be paid, i.e. the people have done a runner, how do you put that in the figures? Do you show it still as a credit, or is it written off? And how do you cover saying that we've still got money in the bank or we haven't got money in the bank? How do you work around that one?
Again, a moving feast, but Lizzie, please.
I'm going to start getting into some technical stuff here. So, and actually, for me, being the geek, I actually really enjoy these technical areas. When we raise invoices, we recognise the income on the raising of the invoice. We have to make an assessment at the end of the year, physically for our accounting purposes, actually how much of that debt is still recoverable. So we do an adjustment at the end of the year based on all of the knowledge we know. However, there are processes that everybody who is involved in recovering income, charging people, whatever that is for fees and charges, there's an income code of practice that you will have seen as a committee. So policies and procedures around the steps that you need to undertake to maintain the receipt of that income. We will go through certain processes of sending reminders and referring debts to legal and then going off to court, depending on how recoverable those debts are. So there are guidelines, there's a policy set out for taking all of those steps, but a physical assessment at the end of the year is done to ensure that we're not overstating our income.
Yes, please, a follow-up, feel free.
I think I've asked this question before, but time has gone on. With these high sheriff bailiffs people, don't we ever get hold of those to chase up? I know they don't win every time, but they are the ultimate side of it. And I've never known a council go to these people. And here we are next door to Shire Hall where we can get in quickly to get it done. No?
Feel free, Lizzie. Again, might be one for scrutiny, or I'll do it. But go for it.
We don't use bailiff services. We will go through all avenues as set out in the Income Code of Practice, following all of the legislation, all of the legal advice that we have from our legal debt recovery officers. It takes something for our debts to get that far anyway. Mm. We have to be very mindful of the individual circumstances and very mindful of those individuals then tripping into additional services for the County Council or the District Council associated with their position. So we don't write debts off, actually quite lightly. We do consider all of those aspects and the aspects of the individual circumstances. Very rarely would we ever be in a position to actually want to chase it through those type of means, but we just do not do that.
Thank you. Liz.
Thank you. There's one just tiny thing on page 104 that I guess we'll soon move from all six Somerset local authorities to all five. And also, I just wanted to ask where we stand regarding risk on the completion of JCAD. I know I, outside this meeting, asked Pam one day when she was showing me how the system worked, who would monitor it in her absence? And I'm not sure whether we're robust enough in that area.
Yeah, I think that's a repetition, isn't it, of our discussions before, previous meetings, but Pam?
Right, there are a couple of changes afoot since we met in January. As of Monday, April the 1st, and I hope it isn't a date they picked, I'm moving to sit within finance, so I'm going back to where I came from many years ago, and I'm going to be relocated with the insurance team. So there is hopefully also going to be the possibility of then having some additional support who I can bore to death with JCAD, which I love, my baby, but who would then be able to do all this reporting and backing up and who would be available if somebody needed some assistance with it. So I'm hoping that we will have that sorted sometime soon.
Thank you. I know it's positive, isn't it? A little bit of continuity coming through. Lizzie?
And just for awareness for you as a committee, so insurance and risk will then be reporting to me as the chief accountant. I'm very keen to build that resilience within those teams, make sure that we are sharing some of that knowledge and experience. Heather, as an insurance manager, will also be much more aware of all of those corporate areas for Pam, and then Pam also aware of some of the operational risk areas that Heather would deal with in those, that insurance world. So hopefully the aligning of those two services actually is a better fit to be able to tackle some of the issues that may be within services and actually make it more able for us to deal with that across the organisation. So I'm hoping to build that resilience, knowledge and expertise in the teams.
Thank you. Bob, please.
Just a question, if I could, on paragraph 4.5, the SWOT partial audits and the overdue ones. Most of them are relatively recent. One of them, the education of children looked after, is over 18 months overdue. Is there a reason for that, and is there anything that's being done to turn that one around?
I can answer and say that we're following up at the moment. So we are doing our formal follow-up. It is in progress at the moment, but that doesn't explain why they're not updating JCAD, does it?
I should be following up personally later.
Thank you, members. So again, we are going to end up repeating ourselves, and I'm not ashamed to do so, so I make no apologies for it. So again, just to be clear, within our minutes, we will note the progress, and thank you very much for that clarity on how you're moving forward with this. But we feel as a committee the importance of keeping JCAD updated and supporting, therefore, Pam in her sometimes perhaps exasperation to keep it updated is of paramount importance. And thank you, Mandy, for agreeing to chase that up after today's meeting. other than that, thank you, Pam, for that report and the progress that's being made. And we'll just note for a committee, we have heard those nine partial audits, and I was very conscious, and I can't quite recall how many audits ago it was, but it was something that Councillor Rigby brought up, or it may have been Liz. When we hear partial audits, the officers coming are, you know, it should be seen as a very good platform for them to explain and to really reassure the audit committee that these are being, as we've said already, I think taken seriously is perhaps the word. So we don't want to sort of over-exasperate that. Officers shouldn't just be coming just because. So we haven't got one here today, but going forward in June, there will be one and another one. So I think that's the right way forward. So moving swiftly on to agenda item 10 then, our committee future work plan. Lizzie, please.
Helps if I press the button, doesn't it? So Appendix A sets out the proposed items for consideration in the next couple of meetings. So you can see from the item set out in June, am I catching it? is focused on actually the control environment, including things like the draft annual governance statement, as is usual for this time of year, and also looking at partial audits and the annual report from the audit committee. And July has a focus, as it does every year now, on the statutory statement of accounts for the pension fund and Somerset County Council, and then including the additional items of the partial audits as well. The only additional item I wanted to just discuss with you today was the offer of training for the statement of accounts for the audit committee, as we always do every single year, to support you in your role as those charged with governance of approving the statement of accounts. And I would like to suggest, if everybody is available, for us to be able to do that session on the afternoon of the 20th of June. So following the audit committee on the 20th of June, obviously allowing a lunch break, I would like to suggest that we do the training in the afternoon while you're all still here in Taunton. And I don't know whether people will be available for that or not. Just a suggestion from me.
Thank you, Lizzie. No, I think it's a great suggestion, and the fact that we are, or we would all be here for audit anyway, it would make sense to me to offer that up afterwards. I don't think we're saying you absolutely have to.
No, absolutely not. And for those who aren't available, we can always run through the statement of accounts and pick out any particular points that are pertinent to that year's statement of accounts or any accounting changes that will then impact on the accounts, just so people are aware of some of those technical things if people aren't available for that session.
Lovely, thank you. Yeah, I've seen you, Liz. And can you confirm then, just before the July meeting, there'll be a little bit of a pre-briefing as well available for members to aid with that understanding?
We would hope to do that in the session on the 20th of June, if we set that date, to make sure that, because it's a very lengthy technical document, we do like to give the audit committee suitable time. So we will issue a soft copy of the accounts in draft form following the 31st of May to give some time to be able to read through and potentially highlight areas of question, and then go through that at the session. But again, if people require additional support, help, advice on any of those items, we will always be happy to do that.
Lovely. It would be beneficial, I think, to get it ahead, and then if there's a refresh. Liz, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I welcome that very much. I just think we've got a clash with LEP scrutiny that day. We'll have to sort out the LEP scrutiny, because that, if it's the same as the last meeting, goes on all day now.
Yes, it does. I can't comment on what the leader has done about the LEP scrutiny, but I had, hence why I couldn't say anything, I had a conflict of interest there at that particular day, which has been highlighted. So I don't sit on the LEP scrutiny anymore, but if you are there all day, then yes, I will flag that up as a possible way you may need, because I would value you being there.
I don't want to miss the audit day. I'll ask whether I can have a substitute at the LEP scrutiny.
Yeah, thank you, Liz. Check that with Scott. Any further comments, queries, questions on the forward plan? Well, that leaves me to thank everybody, officers, Peter, etc., for their attendance today and input. Again, I personally think it's a very positive meeting and good lines of questioning. Good items identified, as always, and things that we can take forward as a committee via the appropriate channels. So I will bring that meeting to a close, noting the date of the next meeting of the 20th of June here. Thank you.